and or just a week out of sync, whatever, things happen. This is We Watch Stuff number 7. It's Jeremy, and joining me as always is Shahid. Hello, friend.
Hey, what's going on? So, how was the weekend?
Yeah, the weekend was the weekend. I went back to Greenville for wedding stuff, and then drank all day Saturday while she was at the bridal shower. That's not the smartest plan, so I paid for it a little bit. So, but I don't know. It was a busy weekend for pop culture, for the ninjas. I don't know. We were going to talk about this last week and didn't. Let's just start. We'll get to that news first. But we both finally saw Snowpiercer, and I don't know, man. What'd you think of it?
I enjoyed it a lot, but I can understand why it wasn't necessarily a summer movie, because it was it's probably one of the darkest movies I've seen in a long time. So, you know, part of me wishes it would have got like a wider release and everything like that, but just after seeing the movie, I could kind of see why it was kind of under the radar.
Yeah, I totally agree with that was a dark movie, and I mean, just thematically, we can get into it in a moment, but like from shot to shot, you didn't know what you were going to get. If you were going to get that bleak dystopian view of everything, or if you were going to get the everything's normal, but we're still on a train sort of thing. I don't know. I don't know how you could have marketed this movie for a wide release without it coming across as some horrible, like, B or C movie. So,
yeah, I guess the best way, if you would have did it as, like, a fall movie or maybe a winter movie, so I'm trying to think of, like, big, like, quote-unquote, not small budget, but, like, medium budget scale movies that, like, dark theme and how it was marketed. The last one I can kind of remember was The Gray. And that kind of was like more a bait and switch, because I remember that movie came out, you just thought, oh, it's like Liam Neeson fighting wolves.
Yeah.
And then you see the movie, like, this is a dark-ass, kind of depressing movie. So.
And spoiler, you never see him fight the gray. You never see him fight the wolves. So, and he loses, which this is the spoiler part of the show, everybody. So if you haven't seen The Gray, sorry, he loses. Everyone dies. So.
Well, they leave that kind of ambiguous. If you want to be nice about it,
I don't know how ambiguous it could be when during the credits you hear the wolves and they all start just, is it howling or baying, whatever they do with the moon?
Yeah. Well, you see one wolf kind of laying there half dead. You never see him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, maybe he won. But since I doubt we'll be getting a sequel to that movie.
Thinking if you get in a fight with a wolf in the wilderness with no sense of, you know, technology or civilization around you, you lost the fight regardless. And the fast forward, now we mentioned this part first. We're going to start with the end of Snowpiercer. I thought the end was it almost seemed like there was supposed to be a triumph at the end of this movie with the Snowpiercer being derailed and I can't pronounce his name. The prisoner and his daughter, right? That was his daughter.
Yeah, that was his daughter.
Okay. The two of them surviving and walking off into the cold. That's just the two of them, though. And unless this is like the Book of Genesis, that's the end of civilization. So it was, I just looked at it as, well, okay, great. You derailed the train. Everybody died.
It wasn't necessarily him and the daughter. Wasn't it the daughter and the little boy?
See, that's what Elise was telling me as well.
Yeah, he died because the father and Chris Evans' character died for saving him. So that's even worse if you kind of think about it.
Well, I guess we can jump around a little bit, but Chris Evans even showed that he had his own, like, he didn't have selfish ambition, but he saw a way out for himself while remaining on the train. And I thought, what a strange turn this just took. Because when he was offered to be the conductor, he was going to take it. And I'm just sitting there going, is this how this movie's going to end? What a bleak-ass movie this is. And it almost, and that's why I thought, like, them derailing the train, even with that little kid. So there's a 50-year-old, I think, Korean guy? I don't remember. His daughter and, like, a 5-year-old black kid. There's no one left. I guess enjoy walking around in the snow for a couple weeks because you're all dead. And that's the end of humanity.
Yeah, because it's not like they showed any other survivors. Like most of the cars already crashed before a train even stopped, and they didn't really show anybody else surviving. They didn't really imply to anyone else surviving. So I got two little kids with, I mean, if they can find food, you know, with polar bears and everything else that's surviving in just the middle of nowhere with snow.
Right.
And they don't have any outside experience or any outside living training or anything like that. So it's kind of, you can say on one hand, oh, you know, they're in the startup of Genesis and everything like that, but you got to learn from something, and all their teachers are dead.
Yeah. And, well, I guess the dad was around being 50, because it only takes place 17 years, right?
Yeah.
Okay, 17 years after the premise of this movie, sorry, is they tried to stop global warming by releasing chemicals into the air, because that always works. And it causes the entire planet to go under basically a day after tomorrow type scenario, but planet-wide. You find out later that this eccentric... They kept saying billionaire, but there's no way a billionaire built that train. He had to be like, whatever's higher than a trillionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... And that's one thing about the movie. You have to buy into the premise.
Well, maybe he was like, I was trying to think, Richard Branson level. Because doesn't Richard Branson own, like, you know, his own almost space shuttle?
Yeah, no, he has space. He has spacecraft, essentially, yeah.
So I was thinking if he was as rich as Richard Branson, and he just had a train instead of a space shuttle, because I doubt space shuttle would be cheap. Like, if he was, I don't know, what, Rupert Murdoch level rich? Would he be rich enough to make a train like that with help?
Yes. Well, yes, I would believe so. And I'm trying to think. They didn't mention anyone helping I call him the conductor because I can't remember his name.
They made the effort to make fun of him saying how, you know, he over-engineered the train and, you know, and, like, he went too far and stuff. Like, he's basically wasting his time and money. And it kind of proved, like, you know, he knew what was coming on. He knew what he was doing. It's funny how that works.
But isn't that how it always is? The eccentric people? I mean, look at Tesla. And coming to modern age, what you just mentioned, Richard Branson, everybody goofs on him because he was, the head of Virgin Records, right?
Yeah.
And then he came up with his own cell phone line that everyone said wasn't going to work. Still around. And he's basically privatizing space travel now. So, yeah, I mean, it's everything in the movie is kind of based in some sort of, like, realistic trope, if you want to put it that way. And, you know, it got kind of heavy-handed in parts. But there were, like, your main character wasn't your typical good guy, though.
No, and... You don't really catch how bad he was till toward the end of the movie. It's kind of like, you know, he's a grizzled veteran. It's kind of like they put him like he's an anti-hero at first. You think, no, you know, he's a reluctant hero. He's just trying to do what he feels is necessary. And then they drop that kind of bombshell near the end of the movie. We can talk about that later. And it's just funny. Like, I didn't think Chris Evans had it in him, you know, doing like a Christian Bale impersonation. But he was very good in this movie. Like, surprisingly. Like, I shouldn't be surprised because, you know, I've seen Captain America enough in the Avengers to know, like, you know, he has gravitas. But it's still where I kill every time I see him, I still keep thinking about, you know, that's Fantastic Four. Chris, you know, that's Johnny Storm trying to be serious.
That's a good call, actually, yes. I always wondered what I was constantly putting my thumb with him, like, something's still not right, and it does go back to that Transformers, even though same thing. The Fantastic Four movies. No, but you're right. This was a pretty solid performance by him. You know, Captain America, Avengers, you know, it was what it was. It was good. But, I mean, really, you could put anybody in that Steve Rogers suit.
I want to say, I used to think that, but imagine if Ryan Reynolds was in that role. And all things being considered, would you think those movies turn out well if they did? And no offense to Ryan Reynolds. Like, it's kind of... Well, it's easier said than done. It takes a lot. You have to be earnest and cynicism-free and not be goofy to play Captain America and it be realistic. Like, I think out of, you know, I don't want to get sidetracked, out of Thor, Iron Man, and Captain America is probably the hardest to play to take seriously. Like, Thor, all you got to do is, like, Shakespeare and work out. And Iron Man is this, you know, it's Batman with a sense of humor, more or less. But like Captain America is like, you know, virtuous and honorable and rah, rah, rah. And like this day and age, usually you'd be laughing at stuff like that.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. And I do remember like some of the scenes with Captain America, especially in the future parts, with speaking of Winter Soldier in this case, where he was doing his old like 40s shtick and people in the audience were kind of laughing at it. Like, no one talks that way, and or just embarrassing, even though he was being perfectly cordial and polite to people. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I understand why it was funny, but at the same time, it's like, well, he's actually acting proper. Like, he's acting as an upstanding person. So, but Chris Evans, I thought it was going to be this gigantic fight for an hour and a half. And it was actually very well paced, and he acted as like the anchor for everything. Outside of like a lead character, you know, is relied upon to move the action forward, but the anchor can be like someone in the crew or someone on the outside that you can always go back to. But he was both of those in this, and that's what I really liked about it, and especially because of how ridiculously flawed he was, and.
Yeah.
They never explained what his deal was before the train, did they? I don't remember.
I mean, you can kind of guess. They never did, but it was like if he took the route he took, it wasn't like he was a Boy Scout or anything before he got on that train. So,
and that's what I was trying to figure out. If he was supposed to have been like some ex-con, some just criminal.
Do you want to just get to it? So it's kind of like we're dancing around it, or do you want to wait a little bit?
No, we might as well just get to it. That's
okay. So I'll go ahead. So I'm watching the movie. I'm getting a whole, you know, he's this anti-hero. He's leading him to the train and everything. And then all of a sudden, he dropped this bombshell. Like, when we first got on the train, we didn't have any food. So I started eating babies. And that's why I know babies taste better than normal, you know, normal human beings. And I'm about to eat this one baby. And these people start chopping off their hands and legs to save the babies, to hold us off. And this one baby I was about to eat ended up being my best friend. Now, when that part happened, I just stopped. I'm like, that changed the whole vibe of the movie. Almost not. It's almost I'm trying to think, like, if I was watching Batman and then Bruce Wayne bust out, oh, you know, I raped this little 14-year-old before I left and trained to become Batman, and that's why she became Catwoman. Like what the hell? Like, it's just, it fit the movie and it fit the story and it kind of like, you know, but it was just, it threw me off a lot. Like, it just changed my whole, like, there's no heroes in this movie.
Well, and that was right before he took Wilford's offer.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I've done all these horrible things and now I'm going to accept another. Well, in a sense, a horrible stance, but for self-preservation-wise, that's the best step he can take for himself.
Yeah, because he got played, because not only that, right before then, it's kind of like, you know, your mentor that he's looking up to basically played you, like him and the conductors working this whole con, the kind of, you know, artificial, you know, population control. And it's kind of like, you know, you got duped this whole movie. It's kind of like, you know what? it's not like I'm the most heroic person to begin with. The person I looked up to was lying the whole time. Almost all my friends died. The hell with it.
Yeah, I thought that was very Matrix of the movie. When it got to like the reveal, like this happens, you think this is the first time this has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like whenever, what was the population got to 78% or something like that?
74%.
Yeah, it was, all right, get a rebellion, get rid of them, start over again. Only in a matter of preservation for the front of the train. And that to me is such a hard concept to wrap around. They were a little heavy-handed in this aspect when it came to the different like sects. Like the back of the train's awful. The front of the train is immaculate. All right. It was a tad heavy-handed for me.
Yeah, but not what I liked about it was it was flawed immaculate. It was kind of like what you think it should be. Because kind of like you can see they have a school, and you can see a farm, and you can even see something like, you know, gourmet sushi. Why the hell would you have a rave club?
Okay,
like it's kind of like almost that's something where you think that's what you're supposed to have. Not almost like, you know, it's functional, it's even serving a purpose, because it's almost like someone, and I'm glad you brought the Matrix. It reminded me a lot of the Matrix, like if a machine designed something where they thought how class, you know, people and class position it would be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like you have this idea, but it's kind of off a little bit. And that's the film I kind of got watching that.
Well, at first when they were going through all the front cars and like the gourmet sushi, all that sort of stuff. And then they go to like the very stereotypical upper crust Victorian English. I know it's two different things, but Victorian English, like string music. Everybody's dressed to the nines. They're all white people, and they're just sipping, drinking tea or having scotch, whatever else. And I'm like, oh, that's just kind of blatant. But then and I'm really happy you brought up the rave scene, because I was going to. If you look at the rave scene, it was all Indian, Asian, and black people. And I thought, that's so weird.
Yeah.
The playoff, like, if you want to even look at it like in a societal way, that the white people and then what we consider in our country, all the minorities, still separated, but they're also in the front of the train where all of the upper class, upper crust, rich, whatever you want to call it, are.
So even if you're in the front of the bus, you're still not sitting in the same row.
But everybody's happy in their element too, or at least seemingly happy in their element. And I thought, I was like, what an interesting choice to do. And I always look at all of these post-apocalyptic things, even with The Walking Dead. Walking Dead kind of blends this a little bit, but at the end of the world, no one works together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's probably how it would be. But like even watching Snowpiercer, I'm thinking, and especially after this scene, it really got to me. If the back of the train and the front of the train just combined, what a thriving society they could have. But then when they had a prison built on it, I was like, well, okay, I don't know.
Yeah, it's always weird, and I kind of noticed that with a couple movies I saw, how like foreign directors, they seem to do it better than American directors, talk about like class and race and stuff, because like one hand, they're heavy-handed, but they're more likely to actually go there and not be afraid and tippy toe compared to like how we would do if we do it in a movie. Like if an American did it, I don't know if they would go as far as that. They would probably like imply it a little bit, but they would probably be kind of afraid to cross that boundaries. Like this guy, I forgot the name, or this director, like Korean directors, they don't give a damn. Luc Besson, who did Lucy, he goes there all the time. Like he's heavy handed as can be in kind of like a goofy way, but he doesn't have a problem crossing that either. So yeah, I kind of noticed that, and it kind of like just tripped me out. And it was kind of thinking like, it was almost like if the Matrix happened and at the end they gave Neo a choice, like Matrix Reloaded, like, they have a choice where, you know, you can go and change them, you know, save a few people and restart Zion, or everyone dies, and he chooses option A. Like, you know, I'm going to go back and just pick my seven and just, you know, we start over the right way. That's almost how this movie reminds me of. Like, you know, they give the hero, the quote-unquote hero, a choice. Are you going to do the rational thing, or are you going to try to do the heroic, stupid thing? And 9 times out of 10, they do the heroic, stupid thing. And this is the one time where it's like, you know, I'm doing the rational thing. Mm-hmm. And you rarely see that in a movie like this.
Okay, and all right. And you mentioned it. This was also a movie where anyone can die at any second, and does. And the only reason I bring that up is you mentioned all of his friends are dead. So, and if they had survived, I mean, he again, spoilers, guys. If you haven't seen it, then you shouldn't be listening. But he watched his friend Jamie Bell. What's Jamie Bell's name in this? Edgar. The one, I can't remember who, I'm looking up, Franco the Elder had him and was going to kill him unless they stopped. And Chris Evans just looked like, I'm going to go. And he, you know, it causes Edgar to get his throat slit. And he's like, all right, and just keeps on running. And that kind of goes to what you were just saying, where the hero usually chooses, you know, okay, I'll give up, I'll get taken hostage or whatever, and let my friend live. Well, in this case, he takes the hard choice and sees what happens.
You know, the funny thing, when I saw that scene and I saw later, I was joking around when he was probably looking at Edgar, he's probably thinking, I should have just ate that baby when I had the chance. Because it kind of colored, like, I can't even watch that movie. That's the type of movie where, you know, after you watch it the first time, when you watch it again, it's kind of, you can't watch the same way because it's colored knowing what type of character he is.
Yeah, it's kind of like The Sixth Sense in that respect, where you already know what's coming. So you watch it with a different perspective, trying to catch, like, oh, okay, I can see why this happened, why this happens. You know, character motivations, I guess.
It was one scene, and it kind of weirded me out, and that's saying a lot with this movie. And it was the whole school car scene.
Yes.
They were just so, you know, oh, we're teaching and blah, 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 and everything. And you see them passing out all these eggs, and they're talking about extinction. Because earlier, you know, they made a point saying, you know, the guards don't have any bullets, they're friends. So you're thinking it's, you know, your guard's down. It seemed a little cheerful and off, and a little off, but not worried about. And then all of a sudden, teachers just pull out guns, and you just see people getting slaughtered across, you know, 3-4 different cars. And I'm just like, what the hell? So
when the teacher pulls the gun out and starts firing, yeah, that was kind of a lot. And that's how you know it's a foreign film as well. Even if it's in English, you know it's a foreign film. There's no way that scene takes place in any sort of American Hollywood.
Not this day and age.
No. But yeah, the school scene did creep me out, actually, because it was all very brainwashed. Everyone's very prim and proper, basically like a Little Rascals type school. Like, yes, Miss Crabtree, and then chanting the creator's name, and then the awful, if we go outside, we all die. If we go outside, we all die. Something like that.
Yeah.
At first, I didn't understand the point of the scene. And then as you get into it, it's like, all right, so even like the poor section, the prison section, they're actually, with their constraints, mentally they're free. Physically they're not.
Mm-hmm.
To where the front of the train, the people are physically free, but mentally they've just been controlled. And Tilda Swinton, is that her name? Yeah.
Yeah.
Her character was a great example of that. She was told what to do. She did it and didn't question anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like the dichotomy between that, to where you have nothing and you're freer, to where if you have something, you're just controlled and don't realize it. But the class levels and all that, and it's a pretty rich movie.
Yeah, and it kind of, I like how they spent enough time explaining the basis of the movie. They didn't try to talk about details because it's kind of like if you go to a certain extent, you're going to notice the plot holes and just focus on, like, of course, you're talking about, you know, the whole thing. How does the train run? Maintenance and everything. Like, the train never stops. How does it go? It's kind of like, I guess the front of the train was providing water. You know, its motion was providing water for the whole train. And then, of course, they focused on when self-repairing pieces couldn't self-repair anymore. Well, that's what the kids are for. And, and it's kind of like, that makes sense because that's not the first time kids have been used for dangerous jobs. And this happened throughout history. So that part's fine. I never really thought about any of the other plot holes. I was just watching the movie. I was just thinking about how dark this movie was. And then just funny, like, the mumbling Korean inventor that's just thinking he's a drug addict the whole time. Mm-hmm. He's noticing things no one else is noticing. And it's kind of like, even though it seems stupid, his plan, you're rooting, kind of rooting for him because at least he has hope, and Chris Evans didn't have any by the time the movie ended. And of course, whenever Ed Harris shows up, especially wearing a bathrobe, it's going to catch my interest.
Yes. So. I'm like, is this Ed Harris? That dude picks weird movies. Him and William Dafoe now just pick whatever role they want.
I guess he's at the point where, you know, I don't know if he's won an Oscar. I know he's been nominated a couple
of
times.
Yeah, for Pollock, I believe.
Yeah, like he's made money. He's had his run. So it's kind of like, I'm just going to have fun at this point. So why not? So if I can, you know, do my whole 5-10 minutes, you know, wise, eccentric asshole eating steak, I'm going to go ahead and do it. And it's kind of like, it's cat. I was kind of understanding, like, I didn't feel angry at Chris Evans for making that choice. Because it kind of like, I don't blame him. If all that stuff happened to me, why not? You stuck on this train, you might as well make the best of it. Especially if, you know, your friends are dead and half your friend, you know, your father figure screwed you.
Yeah.
You give me the damn steak.
Yeah, and another thing, and it's because when I was bringing up the working together thing, if the Korean prisoner, which his name in the movie actually was Fuyu, I believe that was him.
Okay.
If he could have let Chris Evans in on this, well, they wouldn't have known. Well, Chris Evans basically was going to take over as the conductor because of Wilford getting older. Well, you know, fighting that whole way, you would develop a bond to where, you know, Fuyu, could have just said, look, I noticed outside the plane, the people on the mountain, I'm seeing more and more of them every time we go around. We can survive outside. To where the simplest of communication could have possibly saved the entire train from, you know, derailing and seemingly killing everyone. And I know it's a stretch, mind you, but and I'm just thinking of this, that's why I'm stumbling trying to create a cohesive thought. I did notice that there's an actual sequel to this, not the movie, but the comic it was based on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing without having read it, cause it's a French comic, that people must have survived from the plane or the train, excuse me.
Yeah, well, I guess that's, you know, I would assume so. It couldn't just be two little kids. And it's kind of like most of the people died, but I could figure, you know, like loss, a plane crash, and people survived from like the front end and the tail end. So all those cars, they may not be in the same area, but I could see, like, you know, how many people left, a few people survived. And I know they're glad they don't have to eat, you know, mashed up roaches.
That was so nasty. At first, I couldn't tell what they were. And I'm like, they're bugs. And then it slowly dawned on me. Roaches are supposedly made to survive a Holocaust. So, a nuclear Holocaust. So, I put two and two together. It's just... Yeah, those bars that they were making the back section eat. Oh, boy.
Yeah, and at first it's like, you know, is it people It's kind of like, nah, that's too easy.
That's what I thought at first, too.
Yeah. So, but it's just like, ugh. Yeah, and like then you see them eating sushi and everything. It's kind of like, you know, it's taking different parts of movies and putting together, and like it's enjoyable. But I don't know. I think it would probably look great in like a big screen or IMAX screen. But I don't know if that's the type of movie I would want to see in a movie theater, to be honest. Because I would probably be depressed out of. And it reminded me, and I don't know if we're going to spend too much time on, like, watching The Purge. Like, I saw that, too. And, yeah, that was a movie. And I'll just say that.
Now, are you, we can move on. So there's our Snowpiercer review.
I'll say it quick. Like, I went to saw it, and I'll say a quick thing.
And you're talking Purge Anarchy, right?
Yeah, Purge Anarchy.
That, all right, I haven't seen it. That looks like a far more interesting movie than the first one.
Man, that is an understatement. I'm not going to say it's a great movie. It's definitely a lot better than the first movie. Mm-hmm. I was watching it. I was thinking two things. Well, three things. One, the main character in the movie, Frank Grillo, he'd be a great Punisher. Was the first thought, I thought, because he was just great in the movie. And I was getting angry because you know how you have the main hero and then you have like useless, you know, sidekicks and useless characters.
Right.
They took that to the nth degree.
Oh,
like
really?
People were like sucking their teeth. Like, I think there's people out there like, he just needs to shoot them. Like, and it wasn't just one. It was like four of them. No. Like they redeemed themselves by the end, but it was some tough going. And two, it expanded on the whole universe and it kind of talked about stuff. Like it brought a whole lot, like the same thing with Snowpiercer, like class and, you know, what could lead people to think this idea is a good idea? And, you know, how would it actually play out? Cause it's kind of like, you know, the first one is kind of, oh, you know, it's just a way to relieve stress and it's cool. The second one is like, you know, if you were rich, how would you do it? You know, it's basically a way like call poor people and rich people to have fun and be in control. And of course, it's going to be people that has an issue with it. And it kind of kicks in with like family and stuff. And then it was kind of like watching the movie. I was like, I know sometimes we watch science fiction movies. You kind of like, oh, it's ridiculous science fiction. Other times like, I hope this never happens in real life. And it just reminded me like if you watch Fox News and you just took it to the extreme, you could honestly see that happening. And it was kind of like, I want to say, it's scary. That's the best way of thinking. Like, I would hope that would never happen. Because the first one's kind of like, oh, you know, it's people stuck in a house and little kids playing, you know, I want to be the Joker or Clockwork Orange thing. This one was kind of like, you know, it's blowing out to a whole world. Like or a whole country. You can see all the outside interference going on, how it will really play out. And it was uncomfortable at times. It was an entertaining movie, but it was an uncomfortable movie. And I wish more people would go and see it because this has gotten decent reviews.
All reviews have been that it's been better than the first one.
Yeah, it's a lot better than the first one. And it's not necessarily like acting because there's nothing wrong with, you know, Ethan Hawke or anything like that. But it's just more expanded. Like they took the ideas of the first one and put more flavor to it. And of course they have, you know, Omar from The Wire. I know he's Michael Williams. I always call him Omar. Like he's playing a meaty role in that. And I would definitely recommend it. You know, you go watch it on Netflix when it comes out. You don't have to watch a movie there, but it definitely catches your eye.
So, all right, and it sounds you've kind of gone over this, but it sounds like it does a world building thing, and I guess
country building thing for the most part, kind of like, is this really a good idea, or you know, who's profiting off the purge? More like, you know, the first thing is like, we're just doing this to relieve stress for a year. This one's kind of like, how did we get to this point? Is this really a good idea, or is it just something for, you know, the weapons industry? And for rich people to, you know, keep down the number of poor people type things. They ask those type of questions. So, or like, you know, it's one scene, like a spoiler. Rich people pay a group of mercenaries to round up people so they can hunt in their own house. And we bid for it. Like, how would rich people purge? They're not going to go out in the street and, you know, mess around, mingle with the poor people. They might get shot. No, I'm gonna bring the prey to my house. I'm gonna have a controlled environment, and they have these assholes with night vision goggles and machine guns, and they throwing people in a dark room with no weapons.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
Well, and that actually ties back into the Snowpiercer as well, when they did that with the security forces. When it's discovered they have guns, they kill all the lights and then just start blasting people in the dark.
And yeah, and like I say, Frank Grillo is just awesome. Like, he has that. And I remember him in The Gray when he's playing an asshole that was always picking fights with Liam Neeson. He was good in Winter Soldier, playing Future Crossbones. He just has a look about
That's
him.
Who that is. Yeah. Okay. All right. I was like, this guy looks familiar, and I couldn't put my finger on it. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, like if they ever did a Punisher, he'd be an awesome Punisher because he just had that vibe, like, you know, like he's a badass. You know, he had a heart there, but he ain't like no heart of gold. It's kind of like, you know, stop messing around. And he makes that clear. Like, you keep messing around, I'm going to shoot you. Type thing. So, and of course, he has his own tragedy, and they kind of add a little bit to it, and it pays off well. So,
okay. So, since you mentioned it twice, and it wasn't on the docket, but, you know, whatever. Can the, and I don't mean in any sort of large scale movie, but can the Punisher ever work as a franchise?
Yeah, if. But the thing is, and you know why I say yes? Because Blade worked. But the thing is, Marvel would have to say, if Marvel is like, you know what, we're going to do an R-rated series with like a $40 to $50 million budget, then yeah, it can work. If they ever decide to go that route, like they, like, because there's no reason Blade was as successful as it was. Because you're talking about R-rated comic book hero starring a comic book that most people don't know about. And, you know, like, I love Wesley Snipes, and I'm sure white people saw Passion 57. But if you're trying to tell me Wesley Snipes playing a hero vampire that's in an R-rated movie, and the stars are him and Chris Christopherson and Stephen Dorff, there's no way in the world you're going to say we're going to get three movies out of this.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say, and you kind of touched on it, but yeah, Wesley Snipes at the time was not a big name. I mean,
the name,
he was average. Yeah. Yeah,
but he wasn't like Denzel. Like, he was probably he wasn't at Denzel's level, and he wasn't at like Will Smith's level. Like, he was known as a great actor, but, you know, New Jack City was a long time ago, and, you know, like, Fast and 57 was a decent hit, but it wasn't like, you know, Independence Day hit. So it's like, I remember seeing Blade, and it was just like, I just thought it was awful. I guess that's still my favorite movie franchise, because it was just, they didn't waste time with origin stories. They didn't try to sugarcoat it. They didn't put a PG-13 on it. They went ahead and they got to it. If they did that with The Punisher, yeah. But if you Marvel, are you going to do that? Because if you can say, well, we can spend $30 million to make $80 million, or we can spend $110 million to make $600 million, then what path are you going
to
take?
Yeah. Yeah. And to back up on something we just said, we were both kind of wrong. Passenger 57, he was in Rising Sun. That was one with Sean Connery.
Mm-hmm.
Demolition Man.
Yeah.
Drop Zone. And then he did that Tu Wong Fu. And then Money Train, which everyone hated because they had that scene where the subway guy gets burned in the booth.
Why I hated that?
Yeah, that was a huge controversy because I think somebody went ahead and did a copycat of it.
Oh, man. I was thinking.
Well, it's like, but he actually had a steady.
It wasn't like he wasn't, you know, working, but all those movies you named besides Tu Wong Fu, I either saw them in the movie theater or I saw them on either. I went to see Money Train. I've seen Passion 57 a zillion times. Like, you know, Demolition Man was a big hit, and Wesley Snipes a big reason. But it was that was a Stallone movie, too. Like, he was working, and he was getting roles, but it wasn't like, you know, I could see him being a movie by himself, because it's like, I never even heard of Blade until that movie came out.
I used to read comics, and I had no idea what it was.
So I'm like, a black vampire? Like, this just seemed I thought it was going to be dumb. And then I saw it and I just loved it. So, yeah, to bounce off that, if they had the right, and they've talked about it, if they had the right director and they've tried it twice and they went the cold, serious way the first time with Thomas Jane, and that had his pluses and his minuses. And then they went the extreme, almost crank level violence with the second one. And that was, I want to know if that was a better or worse movie. It was more enjoyable. It definitely wasn't a boring movie.
No, it was definitely more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Well, it was based off of the Tim Bradstreet design and then also like Garth Ennis's run. That's why it was so hyper violent. Mm-hmm. But then they also, it was Punisher War Journal, right?
Warzone.
Yeah. The problem with that movie is they took it away from the director.
Yeah, she talked about it too.
Yeah, so you can't do that and expect a good movie. So, and it also had Newman getting shot in the head at the end, which was kind of cathartic, really. But you know, I always thought the Punisher, the movies should have been really cool, but they never turned out. And the reason I brought it up is Marvel has their Netflix series starting up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so and I the rights have reverted back to Marvel, so it almost seems like he could show up.
Yeah.
And with you saying that, that's why I wonder if you can just have him popping up in this stuff. Even if it's like a 2-episode arc, like Deadshot does in Arrow.
I mean, he could. I just think, like, with this day and age, you got to really have balls to play do that character justice. Because it's kind of like, you know, he's not a superhero. He's not even an anti-hero. Like, he's a maniac shooting people.
Mm-hmm.
And even during the 80s, that wouldn't necessarily have stood out. No, at least like, you know, Commando and Cobra had a reason for being crazy. Just, you know, there was some heroes like Punisher was just whatever.
Well, Punisher, you know, having your family gunned down on you will do that to you.
Yeah, so. And I guess, you know, that's the whole thing. But it kind of gets to a point where it's like, you know, you need to go see some. Like, he would have got arrested or shot a long time ago. Yeah. Like, and it's funny because I remember watching Arrow just thinking, like, you know, this is Batman with balls. Like, he just walking around just killing people. And that stood out because, like, you don't see that anymore. You don't see heroes just. That's 80s stuff or, like, early 90s stuff. You don't see heroes just walking around murdering people. They'll beat them up and leave them for the cops.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a total Dirty Harry Death Wish sort of thing. But those movies were incredibly popular just because of that. But it's basically that's what the Punisher was. He was an 80s anti-hero. Well, introduces a villain first, you know, trying to kill Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then people picked up on the attitude, and that was the 80s. And it doesn't really translate now. I don't think people want to see that.
Yeah, it's like what we talked about before. One day we'll have a podcast like how heroes change, and it's kind of like the Stallones and Schwarzeneggers don't work as well, not necessarily because they make bad movies. It's just because superhero movies and the times have just changed. Like, you don't want to see that anymore. People don't want to see that anymore. Like, people our age still like that. But people, you know, if you've seen Spider-Man, then Commando seem kind of quaint. Like, I just saw Wolverine and everything like that. Okay, so this guy did some push-ups and shot people with a gun or kicked them. Like, so what? Yeah. But I don't know if they ever wanted to. I mean, Marvel's kind of like they seem to have the Midas touch when it comes to casting, even though it's kind of that whole Ant-Man notwithstanding.
Ant-Man, that's turned into a giant disaster.
Because it's, I mean, no one, who really wants. I get irked thinking about that because they always, people have been talking, and it's the whole, we talk about race and comics and movies and everything. And people have been saying, like, how come you don't have a Black Panther movie? And you saying, like, you know, I don't know if we have the fan base or people want to see that. And you throwing out Ant-Man and, you know, like, even like I could see Doctor Strange a little bit. I'm like, you scratching underneath the barrel at this point.
Doctor Strange, I don't understand. But apparently, from what's leaked, is they're going to try and make it a horror movie. Well, okay, but you've got horror characters you can use for that. Now, the rumor is that something happens in the Avengers that leads into a Black Panther movie, or makes it
viable or
yeah. So, but I agree with you. I don't understand why a Black Panther movie hasn't been made. Especially if you're trying to make an Ant-Man movie. But now with all the problems Ant-Man is having, by Marvel's doing or you know the director's doing, maybe that's going to hurt getting a Black Panther movie off the ground.
Yeah, I think it's more necessarily. I think there's enough people that want to see a Black Panther movie where it won't affect it. I think the whole thing with the Ant-Man movie was like, it wasn't like people were asking for it. The whole thing was, you know, ninjas like Edgar Wright, you know, he's one of the patron saints. So they were like, okay, he's doing Ant-Man. He's going to love the project. He's been working on it for years. He's going to do it right. Well, no, he's not doing it anymore. So it's kind of like, you know, I really want to see this movie where somebody else last minute. And Marvel doesn't have the best reputation with, you know, directors. There's a reason only Jon Favreau is the only one that's done more than one to this point. And he didn't do part three because kind of like, you know, I'm making you money and you still not letting me do what I want to do. You know, that whole meta thing, like we can almost kind of like, it's not, they're not here to see you. They're here to see the show. So it's like plug and play. And that kind of gets kind of, I guess that would get frustrating if you somebody, you know, if you're a director, you have an ego and it would get frustrating. People telling you, know, well, we really don't need you. So you do it our way. And you can only argue to a certain extent because they're making money. So,
right. It's almost like directors of these, except for, probably Joss Whedon, I think probably has the most pull.
Mm-hmm.
But he also wrote. He also had the task of writing some comics for Marvel as well.
Yeah.
So there's that foot in the door sort of thing, and he's got that giant nerd following. So that's got to help the case. But it's almost like the directors have just been replaced with, like, the old time directors, like sitting there in the directors' chairs with the beret on, yelling through the big megaphone, like action and all that. That's all they're there to do. And then the studio comes in and takes the picture away from me. What I was going to say, going back to Black Panther, it's been rumored for, what, 10 years? Ever since Blade came out, it's been rumored to be coming out. And it got to the point where, as a you know a comics fan and a comics movie fan, I just kind of tuned it out. And it's like, whenever, whatever. It's never going to happen. To where it almost, you know.
It's almost like it's a joke.
Well, there's that, but then it also, almost like in a way to like kill the interest. Like my interest in that has been so far muted, to where I don't know if it's picked up with other people or not. But kind of like, all right, if we just keep ignoring it, it'll go away. Which I don't know why they would. Because let's face it, and maybe this is gonna sound stereotypical, or whatever. Tyler Perry makes a movie, black people go, they're always successful, and those movies are garbage.
Mm-hmm.
You get, I haven't run into a very mixed audience when I go to comic movies. Maybe it's different in different cities. I've only gone to two while I've been here.
When I've gone, it's always been mixed. It's everybody, like okay. So.
All right. Well then. All right. Cool. Well, good. And then maybe. All right. That'll help my argument then. Hope well or heard it. I don't know. But if you make a good movie, and I think and. To be honest about it, the idea of a lead black character is an easy sell. Because, you know, as long as it's not one of the Wayans or Ice Cube, who are the other go-to, like black actor? Kevin Hart.
Look, if tomorrow at Comic-Con, if it's still going, if Kevin Feige walked up and said, you know what, we're going to do Black Panther, we got Idris Elba, and we got a script going. You don't have to say anything else. He'll sell himself. Because it's like, he has a fan base that crosses all colors. Like, they talk about him being the next James Bond. Like, that's Stringer Bell. He's already got the nerd, you know, coolness with Pacific Rim. He's known. People go to see him. He's been in Marvel movies before. Like, he's been in Thor movies. You know, he has the weight. So you can sell that easy. Like, there's names out there that you can grab and say, you know what, we're putting them there. And people will go see it. And like we talked about before, you know, The Fast and Furious movies. People see those movies.
Yeah.
One white guy in those movies. And people see those. And everyone sees those. And it's a mixed crowd. Like they say, it's probably the most diverse, you know, fan base out of like a movie franchise. And it's like working almost even between white, black, Asian, and Latin. Like everyone sees those. And when it comes to comic movies, I'm tired. And it comes to movies, I'm tired of this whole thing, like, you know, white people won't see a movie with a black person in it. Because I'm like, one, all of us go see white movies all the time. If it's a good movie, we'll go see it. Like, we may not all watch Friends, but we'll go see Batman. And Batman doesn't have to be black for us to go see it. And at the same time, I know plenty of white people that love to go see Denzel movies. And they go see it. Like, I know white people. I live in Texas. There's white people that go to Tyler Perry movies that like that crap. So you can't tell me they're not going to go see a Black Panther movie unless you make Channing Tatum Black Panther or some nonsense. So, yeah.
You know, is the outrage that would be caused by a white guy playing Black Panther, that'd be fine, playing Black Panther, would actually be worth doing that?
South, representing South Africa.
It would be it would be so damn funny to have, like, Channing Tatum play Black Panther.
Just go out.
Just for the outrage.
You know, just saying, well, you know, it's the reverse, you know, because the complaint with, of course, you know, there's a new Thor that's a woman, and then Falcon's the new Captain America. So you know how comic fans feel about, oh, it's PC for the sake of PC. Why can't they leave it back in the day when we were all white? Like, okay, last time I checked, Asgard, they might look like Norway, but they're aliens. So Thor can be whoever the hell they want to be.
Okay, all right. So I'm going to jump in on that. I was at my parents' Sunday, and we're talking, and my dad goes, oh, hang on a second. Like, right in the middle of whatever we're talking about. He goes, what is Marvel Comics doing? And I'm like, oh, really? I was like, he's like, Thor is going to be a woman? And I'm like, yes. I was like, Thor, she's going to hold the hammer of Thor. She's not Thor. Thor has been an alien. Thor has been a frog. Thor has been Donald Blake, who turned into Thunderstrike. I don't remember if it's ever been a woman.
No.
So, and then he's like, so Captain America's going to be a black guy? I'm like, yeah, it's Falcon, his sidekick. He's like, oh, all right.
Yeah, because somebody else has been Captain America, so.
But see, the thing is, they present this, and it's part. Well, first, comic fans are dumbasses.
Thank you.
You don't listen to them because, what was it, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, Dr. Octavius, or Doc Ock, took over Peter Parker's body. They canceled Amazing Spider-Man, and it came out as Superior Spider-Man, where it was Doc Ock in Peter Parker's body and Spider-Man. And they had a whole scene in his head where they fought and Peter Parker died. The last bit of his consciousness left his body. And fanboys went crazy. I'm never reading Spider-Man again. I think it was Dan Slott wrote it. He's like, Dan Slott's just ruining everything. Marvel doesn't know what they're doing. And guess who's Peter Parker again? Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up. It's part of a story. And that's exactly what I explained to my dad. I was like, it's none of this is going to matter. And he goes, well, what about the movies? I was like, the movies are going to stay the same. But and he goes, well, that's confusing. I'm like, you're exactly right. That is exactly what it is.
Yeah, whenever people talk about canon, I'm like, from where? Because these comics have been out, like, especially talk about Batman, about the 40s, and they reboot every 15 to 20 years. Like, every story that you can tell, for the most part, been told. That's why there's always been this new Infinity Crisis or X. Like, there's always a reboot, both Marvel and DC, every 5 to 10 years, because people are like, you know what, this shit's getting too confusing. So we need to start over to clean it up. Because for all the complaints that people have about, oh, like the X-Men, if they did a storyline that fit the comics and you had Cyclops walking around like a dickhead shooting people with a gun, and that followed canon, I don't think that's people going, you know, oh, that's, I like how they fit the story. Like, no, they would lose their damn mind. Or see him at the end of the movie, he making out with Emma Frost on Jean Grey, on Jean Grey's tombstone, because he said, go ahead and move on without me. Yeah, that does not sound like Blockbuster. And guess what? That's canon too. You know, Wolverine, he's been an Avenger. He has, you know, a storyline where he was killing all his bastard kids and everything. So they always move the goalposts for all these characters. If the story's good, that's all I care about. Who cares? But these comic fans are like, oh, I don't want them changing, and they just doing the PC, and you know, they always go the whole thing. Oh, they make a, you know, Captain America black. They're not gonna make Black Panther white.
But see, okay, but see, but even that, and that's kind of what I was getting at. That's inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
They're not making Captain America black. They're not taking Steve Rogers and going, here's a Afro, whatever kinky hairs. I don't know what you people call it. but no, they didn't take somebody and change all of their features.
Just put somebody there.
It's a logical progression. The Falcon and Captain America have been linked since the 70s, I believe. And every time there's a new Captain America, Falcon's been nowhere to be seen. So it only makes logical sense that the guy that would take over would be the guy who's been there as a sidekick, best friend, whatever figure since, you know, 40 years now. But and it even ties, and this isn't the first time that a black guy has been Captain America.
I know.
And people lost their mind when that happened. Mm-hmm. How dare you have, I think it was his, I finally just found it, Isaiah Bradley. I haven't read this series. I just knew about it. And apparently they were experimenting on guys.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of, and I kind of like that story because it kind of fit the time, like, you know,
exactly. No. Just stop talking. That's exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it goes back to comic fans are dumbasses.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why, you know, I don't hang with them for the most part. And whenever I see people getting comic discussions, I make a concerted effort. I don't comment at all because that's a rabbit hole we never get off to. Do we have no time to talk about Lucy before the show ends?
We got about 10 minutes, so we'll pick that up later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that whole thing is infuriating, and it's also Marvel's fault because they're out of ideas. So all they do is generate publicity with these dumbass stories.
Oh, that's comics.
You know,
so, I mean, all the mainstream ones. I'm sure it's people that, you know, read.
Oh yeah.
Vertigo or anything like that, saying they have plenty of ideas. But when it comes to Marvel and DC, you've been doing it that long. It's kind of
DC ruined themselves. That reboot of DC Comics could have been incredible for them. It was good for a while, but they've just gone back to the same sales figures that they had before. But it's both of them are gigantic messes to read, and I get my stack. You know, I go once a month back to Greenville to get my stuff, mm-hmm. and some of it's just a chore to get through because it's a giant mess. But we can talk about that next time. Let's get into Lucy real quick. A movie that my fiance thought starred Melissa McCarthy and Susan Sarandon. So, it's good to hear that that's not what this movie is.
Yeah, so I'll try to do a spoiler-free talk about it. And it's kind of related to The Gray, where it's one of those, in The American, I don't know if you saw that with George Clooney, one of those movies where it's false advertising. Like, you see the previews and you think it's like a Luc Besson action movie. It's not.
Oh, okay.
It is too... The best way to describe it, like if Terrence Malick got hit by a bus and hung with Luc Besson for 15 minutes and then they decided to do a movie together. Because it's two completely disparate movies that really have no business being together, and they're together and somehow it works. It's probably one of the weirdest movies I have ever seen in my life. Like, I still don't know. It's just, yeah, it's a weird movie. It's just short. It breezes by. It's like 90 minutes.
Yeah, that's what I saw.
It's not overstay its welcome. It goes in, it tells a story, and it's out. And it's like I said, Scarlett Johansson, that is her movie through and through. I don't know how they could have got anybody. I don't know if they were talking about getting, I think Angelina Jolie was supposed to, somebody else was supposed to do that movie. And I think ended up being Scarlet. I don't think it was her first choice. I think she was the second choice. So it works, and she's good in the movie. And it's a you won't forget the movie, and I'll say that because it's kind of hard to talk about without spoiling it.
Yeah.
And it's and you know people think oh is it like Limitless? No, they might have that whole you know that crack about you know 10% of your brain and everything.
See, that's what lost me when I saw the preview. When I first saw the preview. They're going through, and she's doing some badass stuff, and you know whatever package gets put in her, and she gets like it. I'm like, okay, some supernatural stuff going on here, science. And then all of a sudden, he goes, Lucy only uses 20% of her brain. I'm like, oh shit, not that old trope again.
Well,
like, really, and
but they, it's okay. The best way to describe it is, it's a lot of philosophy that's related to that. That's talking about, you know, how we process life, how we process time and evolution and how things go about us, you know, like it's a lot of deep clumsy. It's like it's done very clumsily. It's a lot of deep things going on wrapped around this pseudo action movie. Like it should not, it works. It has no business working. It don't really fit, but it's just there. It's like I said, it's two different movies going on at the same time. And it's really, and it's funny. The guy that played the original old boy is the main villain in the movie.
But that's where he's from.
Yes, and I couldn't picture him for nothing. I'm like, he looks familiar. But I'm like, you know, I couldn't. Then I looked at the credits, and I looked at Wikipedia. I'm like, that's him plus like 15. That's him beginning the old boy when he was fat. Yeah.
Okay.
So he's there, and you know, he, like I said, it's really a four person movie. It's her, Morgan Freeman doing Morgan Freeman things. It's it's an Egyptian playing a French cop that's almost like the whole, he's playing a female sidekick role for the most part. That's another weird thing. Like, you know, the roles are kind of switched where it's like, you know, you got the male superhero and you got like the female sidekick kind of like guy in the story. And in this case, the roles are reversed. Like, he's kind of like our view into the story. And she's pushing the story. And then you had the villain. There are some big logic holes in the movie. Not just the whole 10% thing. Because I tell people all the time, if you only use 10% of your brain, you'd be dead.
Yeah, that's...
We use our whole brain. So, you know, we can't figure out what controls everything. And that's still being, you know, discovered and everything like that. But humans are using their whole brain. You may not be aware of it, but it's not like you got a, you know, 80% of hard drive just waiting to be formatted. And then
yeah, exactly.
And then you'll turn to Phoenix. Because that's almost where it comes to. You know, like Bradley Cooper took this drug. He used more of his brain. He learned Kung Fu and he could focus more. This chick turned into Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, that was the other thing in the commercial where people are just dropping. Although I did appreciate, and I'm basing all of mine off the trailer, only one time did she use her hands to do anything. In the trailer, she just looked and people fell to the ground. I was like, okay, that's much better. That was driving me crazy about Magneto, but...
Oh, human nature. We're used to using our hands, but stuff is kind of like... And now, like, if you're a telepath, you really need to point at somebody. You know, if you had telekinesis, you know, it's not like... It's not magic like in Doctor Strange where you have hand signatures. It's like you're using it from your brain. And that's all. But I guess it's the whole thing, you know, people that used to it from Star Wars with Darth Vader.
Yeah, but I always figured that like, the way to explain that is it's just badass to do. You just look at someone and be like, ugh, like, dismiss them and they fly through a window. You know, that kind of fun stuff, to me at least.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's one of those movies where the majority of the action you see in the previews or what you're going to see in the movie, if you go in there thinking it's going to be like the Transporter plus X-Men or something like that, because you heard of the guy that did, you know, he's behind Taken and La Femme Nikita. No, it's not. It's a movie with action scenes. It's not an action movie.
Now, he actually directed this one, right?
Yes, he directed this one.
Okay.
And it's kind of like, you know, he hasn't. Normally, he's been like, you know, he writes and farms his ideas out to his directors. And it's kind of like, you know, you kind of get an idea of what type of movie he'd make. And I've seen a lot of his lately. And it's kind of like, I always laugh at Luc Besson. Like, he looks at countries weird. And he looks at America like it's The ultimate, like, every stereotype pushed to the max.
Yeah.
But it's not mean nature. It's just kind of, like, foreign. But he treats France worse. So I can't really, and that's the funny thing about it. So, but I'm used to seeing that, and he gives it to, like, a director who shouldn't be directing. But the few times he actually, I think this is the first one he's directed since The Family with Robert De Niro. I haven't seen that one yet. That's on Netflix.
I tried watching that. It's a rough one.
Yeah.
His best thing, and we got to wrap up. I don't know why I said we have to wrap up, but we got to wrap up. His best work has always been with strong female characters.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's some sort of fantasy world for him or something.
Well, considering he's married two of his leading ladies.
True. So, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, just going from The Professional, which is not about The Professional, or Leon is in France, but that's not a movie about him, even though he's all over the cover. The Fifth Element is not about Bruce Willis. He's the main guy. That movie's not about him, though. What was the Point of No Return was La Femme Nikita again. Well, he didn't do that one, did he?
No.
Yeah, I'm sorry. He did La Femme Nikita.
That's yeah, he did Point of No Return.
Yeah. And then he did another one. Now Lucy with another female, and then there was something else.
Well, this is the best actress he's had. And, you know, he's basically been – people know his name now because he's done the – he was the mind behind the Transporter movies and the Take movies. And he's one behind probably my favorite bad movie I've seen in a long time, Brick Mansions. Oh, my God.
You went and saw that?
Oh, we went and saw that. And I'll tell you this, I'm glad I saw it, because it was a bad movie. It was a fun bad movie. Like, everybody knew. Paul Walker, RIP, he was, any movie that makes him look like Marlon Brando of acting compared to everybody else, you can kind of tell how the acting is. It's like he was head and shoulders above everybody, and it wasn't even close. Like, the acting is atrocious, but it makes the movie better. Like, it is a fun movie. It's a fun bad movie. Like, and I was glad. Like, they don't usually. You usually don't see movies like that. That's a Netflix movie that was in the big screen. You usually don't see movies like that released anymore, where it's trash and everyone knows it's trash and they just go with it.
See, I was tempted to go see that too. Now that'll be another Netflix or on demand. So.
Yeah, I saw that. It was. I still remember that movie because the storyline was just ridiculous.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking of it, you did tell me you saw that, but I might have been out at the time.
I did a review for it, matter of fact.
Yes, that's right. Oh my God, my mind is gone. I'm in too many different directions right now. So.
Playing like a former, I don't know if he's going to be a Navy SEAL that end up being like a Detroit drug lord that wants to blow up, like, you know, City Hall with a stolen Russian Scud missile.
Yep, that's now it's all coming back, yes. Oh, boy. But, all right. Well, listen, guys, we'll get into Guardians of the Galaxy, which we're both going to see this weekend sometime for next week's show, plus more unintended stuff, like the whole I never did get to my point about the Black Panther movie. So I'll just tell it to you now so you can think on it. Will a predominantly white movie-going audience watch a movie not with just a lead black character, but an entire civilization of them? And I say civilization as if it's some old-timey thing, but the country of, I think it was
Wakanda.
Yeah, is all black people. It's in Africa, right?
Yes.
Supposedly.
Well, and you know, with this being 2014, that the prime minister will have to be played by,
Eckhart.
Oh, yeah. Or, Charlton Copley, he can bust out his accent. Yeah. You know, he's been busy doing, I'm the new villain of the month type thing.
Yeah, so think on that for next week, and feel free and let us know if you think it'll work, because it's one to think about if it can actually work, especially with a large scale budget. So I'm going to take us out. I'll let you say bye, but you can follow us on Twitter. We've said it in the past shows. Go find us. Stunk Granny on everything. Yeah, so that's it. Email stuntgranny at gmail if you got anything. Find us on Facebook, comment. That'll be it. And we'll be back next week with Guardians of the Galaxy and some more opinions on comic characters. Let's take us out, my friend.
For Jeremy Mays, I'm Shahid Abdul-Hadi. Remember, if you're going to eat a baby, season it well. And we are out.